Hey, everybody, it's Chris Aiken here, just reminding you that all of my books are available on sale over at chrisaikenbooks.com. And for you dummies that can't spell my last name, that's A-K-I-N. So C-H-R-I-S-A-K-I-N-B-O-O-K-S.com. Get them. Whether you want the fun musical stuff or you want the depressing divorce and burn accident stuff, it's all there. So go to chrisaikenbooks.com.
Worried about keeping up with your fave friends all summer? Or posting every perfectly pink sunset you see? Don't sweat the connect. You can have it made in the shade with 4 lines of unlimited data for $100 a month. Scroll the staycation pics, find your new go-to takeout spot, or catch some rays on video chat. Whatever you and the crew are into, all the data makes it all that much better. Smile, you're on Cricket.
Cricket Core acquired on 4 lines. Data speed limited to 3 megabits per second. Cricket may slow data speeds when the network is busy. Additional fees, usage, and restrictions apply.
Now that's a parking spot.
Introducing the I may have underestimated the size of my car policy with accident forgiveness from American Family Insurance. Insure carefully. Dream fearlessly. Get a quote. Find an agent. Visit amfam.com.
Optional policy features not included in base policies. Review policy for coverages and exclusions. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.
It is your Classic Metal Show right here on theclassicmetalshow.com. That, of course, was Ozzy Osbourne. The name of that tune was Countdown's Begun. That, of course, was from Black Rain. And a guy that's always got the countdown going on about a million things, as he's one of the most busy guys in the world of rock and roll and heavy metal. It is the bassist of the Ozzy band. It is the mighty Blasco. Blasco, how are you, man?
What is happening, buddy? Thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
Sure, man. Well, dude, this will tell you that it has been a long time since you and I caught up. I actually went and looked because I knew I had interviewed you before. And the last time you were on our show, you were promoting heavy metal karaoke in 2009.
Wow. That's awesome.
So I guess we have some catching up to do.
No doubt, I'd say. Excellent. A lot has happened since then.
No kidding, man. Well, let's start with what's happening currently. You are obviously on the road and worldwide on the road with Ozzy on the No More Tours tour. No More Tours to tour. So talk a little bit about how this first leg of the tour has been going. I'm imagining it's going quite well.
Yeah, today we're in Barcelona, Spain. We're playing the Barcelona Rock Fest. It's like a 3 or 4 day festival. I'm not really sure, but today is our day.
Okay.
And we're playing with Judas Priest and Accept and a handful of other bands, but those are the standout ones that we're gonna roll into the festival with today. So that's pretty cool. Yeah, man. I mean, we're wrapping this one up. We've got today, and we have another gig in Tel Aviv in a couple of days, and that'll be the end of this 6 week leg, which is, you know, kind of really it's sort of really the first full leg. We had a couple of one-offs and stuff, you know, leading up to this, but this has been the consistent tour that we've done, and it's been awesome, man. You know, this has been a bulk of sort of European festivals. You know, we did a lot of, like, you know, the Downloads and Grass Pops and things of that nature, but it's been awesome, man. The kids have been super receptive, the band's on fire. You know, the set list has been great. It's been great having Zach back, and, you know, we're just stoked to be playing. You know, it's been super fun.
Sure. Now talk a little bit about Zach coming back, man, because obviously that's a big piece of the puzzle. That, nothing against Gus G. I think Gus is amazing, and Gus is actually a personal friend, so I'm definitely not shitting on him in any way, but I think the fans just never quite gravitated to him. More because Zach is such a character as well as such an amazing player. You know, how has it been since he came back into the mix? And not only on stage, because everybody knows he's, you know, a top 2-3 guy on stage. But, you know, he did have some transformation in his life with some health scares and stuff. And he seemingly has cleaned that up to where he seems just a just a little bit different now. Does he seem different than he was the first time through?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, when I first joined the band, you know, that was kind of, it was haywire when I first joined the band. Right. And, you know, he was still drinking and stuff, you know, which he's open about. And that was at the sort of the height of the drinking era.
Sure.
And, you know, the wheels started to fall off at that point. And, you know, it was for me to come into the situation where I was just like, oh, wow, this is the greatest thing ever. You know, I'm in Ozzy Osbourne's band, but then, you know, but then it's like, oh, but it's so crazy.
You know? Right.
So, I think, you know, kind of, you know, as cliche as it is, kind of everything happens for a reason. It was probably healthy for them to have a break. It was obviously very healthy for him to, you know, get out of the sort of the darkness that he was in. The health scare served its purpose in that kind of made him wake up, and he was faced to make a decision that he made the right decision with. And he's never looked back, and he's, you know, never regretted it. And good for him. You know what I mean? He's an awesome dude. And I've been pretty much managing him since that transformation. And that's been a great partnership working with him. And, you know, super, very excited about that, and very excited to have him here. You know, he's a client of mine, and he's a friend, and now he's a bandmate again. And, you know, all things came full circle, but it all seems to make sense now, you know, so it's super awesome.
Sure. And, you know, you brought it up. It was something I wanted to definitely delve into with you. You're far more than just, you know, I think a lot of people, they think of you as somewhat of a hired gun, even though you do seem to stay 10, 15 years with most of the big bands that you've been in, you know, but you are far more than that. You're into the management of it. You certainly do understand the business probably better than the average musician that is out there. How would you say that has served you to, you know, not only to get good gigs, because obviously, you know, between this gig and the Rob Zombie gig, you've been in the biggest gigs in the world, but how has that served you as far as not making so many of the mistakes that bands at all levels, even at the highest level, continue to make today?
Yeah, look, I can't speak for anybody else. It's like, you know, I kind of take responsibility for my own life and carving my own path and trying to do what's best for me. I think that, you know, I'm very much admittedly a hired gun. I'm happy to be a hired gun. I made that decision early on. I had my own band.
Sure.
You know, first coming up, Cryptic Slaughter was a band that I was in that was, you know, a group of us. Drown was a band that I was in that was a group of us. And when I decided to transition out of that, I made a decision that I was like, you know what? Like, I would really rather just not deal with the personalities. I would really rather just be told when to show up, what songs to know. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. When's the bus pulling up, and I hop on and I get on it and we go and we play shows, and here's your itinerary and here's your set list. I would really, I love playing music, but I just didn't love dealing with the personalities of, and compromise that it takes to be in your own band, right?
Sure.
And so I comfortably transitioned into that. Now, it's one thing to say, like, I really would rather just be a hired gun. I think that there was some effect of being in the right place at the right time that the trajectory that I then stepped into when I made that decision was, you know, Prong, Danzig, Rob Zombie, Ozzy Osbourne, you know, that doesn't necessarily happen all the time. And that's not easy to replicate or reverse engineer.
Sure.
So I'm very fortunate that I was able to do that. But you know, at the time that I got into the Ozzy Osbourne band, that's whenever I sort of realized, it's like, look, I realistically am a hired gun. I did make this choice when I was younger. And now I'm older, And now I have to accept the fact that I have more responsibility than I had when I was 25.
Sure.
Right. And I go like, well, I love music. I want to be in music, but I know that my time of being a hired gun musician is sort of running on empty, right? The Ozzy Osbourne gig is sort of the cream of the crop. I mean, you know, where do I go from here? Metallica or AC/DC, you know?
Right.
Like, so I'm sort of running out of options, because, you know, those gigs seem to be filled. And so I was like, I want to be in the business. I still want to be in music. I'm all consuming music and all things hard rock and heavy metal. And I really want to still be here, but I just feel like the opportunities for me as a musician are probably starting to run thin.
Sure.
So that's what I did. I created a management company, and I started taking on clients and just started building that. That was about 13 years ago. And so, you know, that my time in Ozzy Osbourne and my time as a manager has run congruently, for the last, you know, 12, 13 years. And I don't know. Like I said, I just made that decision, and I'm fortunate on both sides that it's kind of worked out and ran for as long as it has.
No doubt, man. And dude, I got to tell you, in a very different way, I've been in the industry. I've never been a musician because, quite frankly, I stink. But I have been in all facets of it as well. At one point, I was Dokken's webmaster. At another point, I did marketing for somebody you're well aware of, because it was for the first Black Veil Brides record with Standby Records. I was doing marketing with Neil Sheehan. I've done commercial radio and internet radio, and I've touched metal TV. So I've been in a lot of that, the same as you have. When you get to do those things from many different sides, you learn the business quite a bit more than the average person does. Do you think that learning the whole picture helps to give you advantage over, you know, maybe other management companies that are out there but have not, you know, they haven't, you know, had to get ready for a gig or haven't had to drive 22 hours to the next gig? So they don't think quite on the same level as the average musician does?
It's just a different perspective. I mean, all managers have their origin. I haven't, you know, polled many, but from my experience, I would think that the majority of them have started somewhere in the label world. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a few of us musician manager guys. You know, there's me. What's his name? Paul Geary, who was an Extreme. Who manages Steel Panther now, and he managed Godsmack for a long time. There's definitely a few others that's not coming to mind right now. But it's just a different perspective. I think that the thing that worked for me is that I was fortunate enough to get such an early start in the business, which is really uncommon.
Right.
Like, you know, Cryptic Slaughter got signed to Metal Blade Records when I was 15 years old. By the time that I had graduated high school, I had already been on tour a bunch of times and put out three records. Like, right. That's uncommon.
Sure.
And that was with Metal Blade Records, who Brian Slagle is a good friend still to this day, you know, some 30 plus years later. And so that gave me a very early start into this business from both sides, as a musician and from the business side, in that I was, you know, working with, you know, Metal Blade and going on tour and working with promoters and all facets of the label and just seeing that all work. So, you know, like, for me, my situation is just unique in that way.
Right, definitely. And the uniqueness of that for you is kind of the genesis of what we're actually talking about today, which is your brand new podcast, A New Level. Just outsider, as just a guy, not necessarily an industry guy, but just as a guy listening, fantastic. And I'll tell you why. It's fantastic because it's not the standard schlocky, so how'd you get in the business? And who's your favorite artist? And, you know, where do you like to record? It's none of that. It's the kind of knowledge that most band guys, most young bands that have not done it, would probably pay a premium to learn. And you're doing it with guys at different levels of, you know, of success, but that know the industry. And it is a fantastic look, man, inside at the insider world of the rock business today.
I'm an overthinker. And when I set out to do something, a lot of times stuff just, it doesn't make it past the idea phase.
Okay.
And how me in podcasting even started was that years ago, me and Mike Mowry and a few other guys, we had a mastermind group, and we were a group of managers, and once a week we would hop on the phone and just kind of catch up on all hot topics in music, and maybe, you know, what bands were available, like who was arguing with who, just kind of like real insider trading information within our little, you know, community of heavy metal manager dudes, you know?
Sure.
And during the time that was all happening, Mike had acquired Jabberjaw Media, which is the podcast company.
Mm-hmm.
And guys started to get busy, and the mastermind kind of whittled down to just myself and Mike. And I was like, dude, like, why don't we just record this shit?
Right. Like,
why don't we just fucking you and I get on the phone once a week anyway, like, why don't we just fucking record this shit and make it a podcast and put it on your network? Like, it seems like that would be the most beneficial thing to do. Right. And mm-hmm. He's like, yeah, great. That sounds totally logical. So we came up with the idea of Managemental, the podcast, where it was two guys talking about the business.
Right.
But it took us a while to really get it down to what made sense. So like I said, I'm an overthinker, and it could have easily been two dudes rambling for an hour over analyzing all this stuff and talking about multiple topics. And we did about a dozen demos.
Okay.
That were like that, and it just really came down to where we were like, this sucks, and so we had to go back, and we had to really overanalyze what is going to appeal, how is this going to work, and I listened to a bunch of other, you know, podcasts for reference, and, you know, like, what's work, you know, what works, what's hot, like in terms of business podcasts, like, what resonates, what mm-hmm. works well. And so we came up with this idea of like, look, every episode is going to be focused on one topic, and the episodes can't run longer than 30 minutes because people just don't have that kind of time.
Right.
And not only that, it's like, you know, people that do, you know, use their time listening to podcasts with commutes or what have you.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, you know, anything that, so in my mind, like anything that rambles, it's like you lose people's attention, and it's hard to keep them engaged.
Sure.
So we did it. We demoed a couple like that, and we're like, this is it. We got it.
Right.
And so we did that. Now, all the while this was going on, like I'm a big podcast fan.
Sure.
And I'm especially a big fan of like John Lee Dumas. Entrepreneurs on Fire.
Sure.
I'm a big Tim Ferriss fan, and you know, he just put out that book, Tools of Titans. And then Guy Raz, who does How I Built This Podcast for NPR. I'm like, this is cool, but like no one is digging in deep to the business side of music, or of specifically heavy metal. What I found, and the kind of niche that I was trying to dig myself into, is I was like, a lot of stuff that I feel like music business wise is so general
mm-hmm.
and doesn't focus on a specific niche. And I was like, man, I've been kicking around here since like 85. I know just about everybody, and most people don't interview these people. And I feel like the mission of A New Level was because the question that I get the most is, how does my band get to the next level?
Right.
How do I get in the music business? How do I crack that seal? How do I open that door? How do I get in there? And how do I level up? And I was like, I need to find those answers. That is my mission. My mission is to find answers to this, as opposed to just be like, oh, I don't know, man. Like you just get lucky. Like that's not an answer.
Right.
And that's not what Tim Ferriss found, and that's not what John Lee found. Like, you know what I mean? These people that have dug deep into working and interviewing successful people, they don't just find out that they just woke up one day and got lucky. That's not how this works.
Right.
And so it was my mission to come up with the answer of how do I get to the next level. So that was what I did. So A New Level is really kind of geared towards the heavy metal aficionado, the musician, the person that wants to get in the business and work on the business side. It's really geared towards them and really peeling back the curtain and revealing how these entrepreneurs got started. How did Brian Slagle start Metal Blade Records? You know, how did these people start their companies? How did Ash Avelson start Sumerian Records? You know, and really, really kind of peeling back the curtain of how these entrepreneurs got started, how they built their businesses, and really revealing that it's not luck. It has a lot more to do with passion and guts and follow through and just trusting your instincts.
Right. And if you listen through the various, there's 10 episodes right now of A New Level, and it's really kind of fascinating when you ask, you know, similar questions. Like one question that you asked pretty much everybody, if not everybody, was, you know, was that exact question? How does my band get noticed by, you know, alternative press or Brian Slagle or whomever? And it was really interesting that they all had a different answer. There's not like a uniformed answer to it. You know, I think Mike Shea said that, you know, I think he said something to the effect of, well, if you don't have a buzz and a friend doesn't turn me onto it, then I won't hear it. Where Slagle was like, yeah, I'll take any submission and I'll listen to it. And we'd hope you have some buzz, but if not, and it's good, we'll take you anyway. You know, it's just fascinating to hear different aspects, different people in the business having a completely different view on the same goal, you know?
Yeah. I mean, so in terms of the format of the podcast, mm-hmm. so I very much kind of use the John Lee Dumas approach of like it's a short form formatted podcast. And what does that mean? Short form means that the episodes aren't very long. I try to max out at 30 minutes. The Brian Slagle one ran a little bit longer just because I've known him for the longest and he was just a wealth of information, you know, but I keep it at 30 minutes. And it's formatted in that everybody that I interview gets the exact same 10 questions. And I built those 10 questions that I felt helped answer the question of how do I get to the next level the most effectively. And I want there to be a rhythm of the podcast. Like I want people that understand that they know what to listen for. Like they know what question is coming next.
Sure.
Right. I didn't want it to be a rambling, like I didn't want it to be a rambling discussion where I was trying to find answers. Like, no, I want to get to the answers right away.
Right.
And
right.
I'm very curious how it is that they got to where they got. What do they consider successes? What do they consider failures? What did they learn from their failures? And you know what got them here? And most importantly, is what can young bands, what can aspiring executives do to get where they got?
Sure. And you know, I want to talk a little, just one or two questions about the Slagle one, which to me was the best one that you did. Just, I think probably just because I think I own every record that Metal Blade has ever released. I'm just a total fan of everything that has ever come from his garage to, you know, now the plants and everywhere else. But I gotta say, as much as he's way more knowledgeable than I am, I just don't agree with him. And I'm curious your take on it, on his, I guess, the optimism, I guess, that that the music business is turning to where the digital age is going to kind of cause a revival to for bands to sell again. And, you know, I understood what he was saying, and I thought it made a lot of sense, you know, that with the streams you get plays, and the plays you get money, and they're figuring all that out. But the thing that I think is missing, and this is where I'm curious what your take is, while all of what he said there was true, the thing that is missing is that this current generation has not been raised on a loyalty aspect like we were. You know, you're the same age as I am. We were raised on a loyalty to our bands. Man, if you liked Judas Priest in 1981, you still like Judas Priest today because you were loyal to that band and you dedicated to that band. And I don't believe for a second that the kids today are nearly as loyal to where they're going to continually support their band going forward. And I think that's a big piece that maybe the labels, or maybe Slagle, or maybe just, you know, just me, is not understanding. Where do you stand with that?
That's twofold. In that, the starting off the question of that being optimistic about sales. Mm-hmm. Yes, in terms of record sales, that is over.
Right,
it's done. There's no record stores. There's nowhere to sell albums. Right.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, that is over. But I believe that the bigger picture of what he's saying, and from my own experience as a consumer, as a premium Spotify user, and I even said this in the interview with him, is that a record that he put out by a band called Gozu, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
Because of the platform of Spotify, because of its expansive ability to create discovery, right? I potentially would have never taken a chance in the sales days of the fact that I only have so much money. I'm going into Tower Records to buy records or Virgin Megastore. Like, you know, like I have to really kind of pick and choose what I want. Or even in the iTunes era, it's like, oh, okay, well, if I'm going to get the whole record, I know I got to spend like at least maybe $10. Like, do I really want to take that risk or whatever? Right now, with like the Gozu, for instance, it's like it just because of music discovery, mm-hmm. and because of the platform that it's there, it's at there for me to access their music. And I was like, I have found so much more music that I will now support, that I will now go to the show. I will now buy a t-shirt when I'm at the show.
Sure.
Right? I will now pre-order the vinyl. I did all that for a band like Gozu in the effect that in the sales era, that was a barrier that was potentially preventing me from even discovering a band like that and contributing to a band like that, because I was really going to only put my money in more safe bets. Right.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that potentially what he's saying is that because of the expansive digital world and access to discovery, more bands are going to get noticed. More bands are going to be able to have careers. More bands are going to be able to create income because there's access there. Now, we can debate that a million different ways.
Sure, sure.
But I believe that in my own experience, as a music consumer, that on Spotify, I have discovered and invested time, energy, and money into bands that I would in other worlds not even know existed.
Right. Do you think that a product like YouTube Premium, which is new, is a potential monkey wrench, though, because it, and if you haven't played with it, YouTube Premium is, it has a product called YouTube Music, and within it, you know, it's very similar to a Spotify, except it also offers not only all the legitimate videos of the artist and the albums of the artist, but it also offers the stuff that's been illegally uploaded. So, you know, if you do a search for Ozzy, as an example, if you do a search for Ozzy, you can find all the albums on YouTube Music, and you can find all the videos, but you can also find, you know, a bootleg or, you know, fan submitted video or audio of it, of an album that's out there as well. does that not cause a monkey wrench for the artists because it integrates both the legal and less than legal use of their product?
I don't really subscribe to music theft, and I'll tell you why.
Okay.
Because whenever I was growing up, like whenever we were coming up in the Cryptic Slaughter era, that was like mid-80s.
Sure.
Tape trading was a very real thing.
Mm-hmm.
And whether you were to your buddy, you're like, oh, I'm gonna make you a copy of this record or whatever, and you burn him a cassette, or you make a compilation cassette of different things or what have you. That was a very common thing. Now, you could say that was stealing, right? Because I made a buddy a cassette of a record. He didn't go and buy the record. But if I was sharing, if we were discovering this music together and everybody liked it and everybody wanted to consume it, then guess what? We were good to go to the show. We were good to buy the merch. We were good to support the band if we liked it. So this is why I don't subscribe to music theft, is that a thief doesn't steal something that he doesn't want. I'm not going to steal a Justin Bieber record because I have no interest in listening to it. Right. And so these kids, they don't know any better. They're growing up in a different era to where music is ubiquitous. It's everywhere.
Right.
It's on their phone and every platform that they listen to. They don't know the difference. They just know that what they like, they listen to more than the stuff that they don't like. And the artists that they like, they will support. And they don't know that they have to purchase music. Music just exists.
Right.
But they know inherently that if there's an artist that they like, they will support that artist. And they will go to the shows and they will buy the merch and they will support in whatever way that the products exist. And like, I'm confident in the music fan and the music consumer. I do not believe that they are going to disappear just because music is easily accessible.
Sure. And do you think part of your optimism to that is because metal fans by and large are way more loyal than, let's say, pop fans? You know, pop fans, it doesn't seem, have the loyalty that, you know, our history as music fans and metal fans, and probably even 10 years back from us, you know, to the early days of Black Sabbath, was all built in that era of, you know, turn your buddy onto it, however it went. But then we were loyal to those bands. We're still loyal to those bands, you know, 40 years later. I think metal fans are a lot more loyal, which is why, at least in this environment, maybe it's not such a big deal. No?
Yeah, there is an extreme loyalty. Look, you know, moving into the digital age, I have a fantasy about a heavy metal utopia that we can all, metal is the soundtrack to all our lives.
Right.
And it's not so all consuming the culture of heavy metal, right? The culture of heavy metal involves a lot of things. It involves video games, but what are those video games? They're more war centric, you know, they're more violent types of video games, right? And then we're tattoos, craft beer, weed. You know, there's such a huge, tremendous culture, like almost like if you consider, you know, Vice sort of this culture of urban. Like, I feel like there's somewhere soon to be announced, soon to be revealed, there is going to be a destination of heavy metal culture that pulls together all of the things that we're all interested in. And heavy metal will be the soundtrack to all of these heavy things that we like, you know? And, I'm rambling, but like, I'm just trying to answer the question of like, yes, heavy metal fans are uniquely loyal to their bands. And this music and this culture, and I believe that it's always going to be that way. And look, there's a lot more bands right? There's a lot more information out there. There's a lot more competition mm-hmm. for your interest. There's only so many hours in the day, especially whenever 8 of those are potentially being consumed by a day job,
right?
There's only so much free. And there's more competition now. You know, it's like, do I play a video game? Do I go out with friends? Do I listen to music? Do I listen to a podcast? Do I watch YouTube? Do I watch Netflix? I mean, think of all the immediate access that we have to things that are just on our phone that are, you know, trying to get our attention, right? So, you know, look, we're going to shift into a landscape of where, you know, in the heyday of heavy metal, we had, you know, we had 10 bands that were making $10 each. Now we're going to roll into where we've got 100 bands that are making $1 each,
right?
You know, and it's just the reality, but we have to adapt and we have to roll with it as we will, you know, and that's fine. Cause like I said, you know, the fan is always going to be there, and this genre isn't going anywhere, and this music isn't going anywhere, and you know, here we are talking about it, you know what I mean? I'm interviewing all these people that are still totally active and working in the business. Brian Slagle isn't going to sell Metal Blade and retire anytime soon,
right?
Like, he's still finding more people to work with and more bands to sign and more music to put out into the world.
No doubt, man. Well, something that should be on everybody's phone is the new podcast, A New Level. It's available anywhere that you use podcast, that you get your podcast from. I suggest very strongly that anybody that listens to us goes out there and subscribes to it and sets it for an auto download. Now, you did release the whole thing in one big block. Does that mean that there's like another season coming, you know, after the tour concludes, or?
We analyzed that it would be a good idea mm-hmm. To not just do this big hoopla, but then just be like, oh, and then here's first episode. It's kind of like, let's give people a real chunk to chew on so that they can get a vibe for what exactly I'm trying to accomplish with A New Level. And then so from this point on, maybe we will release episode at a time, or maybe I will just release, you know, in terms of, blocked out seasons. Sure. I haven't really come to that conclusion yet. Cause I'm still waiting to kind of get the analytics back of how people are consuming it and talk to people and kind of see what they feel like would be the best way moving forward. But it made sense to release 10 episodes, an entire season, to give people, you know, 5 hours worth to chew on. And then, you know, and then we'll decide from there how we roll into, you know, the next season or the next episode.
Excellent, man. Well, again, the name of the podcast is A New Level. It is by Blasco. It is excellent. And if you ever wanted to learn anything about the business and not the standard stuff that's out there everywhere, this is the podcast that you need to check out. 10 great episodes are up there right now. So Blasco, tradition on the show, man, why don't you give the plugs and then maybe pick a song that you've played on and tell us a quick story about it to wrap this up.
Oh boy, a song that I haven't played on many songs. Oh, I'll do this one. So Rob Zombie Dragula, I did play on that song.
Okay.
And it was an interesting story because I met with Rob, and I know Rob, and I knew Rob previously because Drown was on the same management company as White Zombie, and Drown actually opened a couple of shows for White Zombie.
Sure.
And then whenever I joined Prong, that was also the same management company. So I'd sort of known him, even if it was at a distance, I sort of knew him a little bit, right?
Mm-hmm.
So whenever he was looking to put together his solo band, I had lunch with him at a diner in Hollywood. And he's like, yeah, he's like, look, man, like, yeah, you've been around. Like, I know you can play. Like, I'm just making sure you're kind of down with, you know, just being a zombie, really, is kind of the way that he framed it.
Sure.
You know, like, you know, you're down to just, you know, kind of get your hands dirty with what it is that I want to do, you know? And I'm like, all day long, bro, no problem.
Right.
Like, I'm stoked to have the opportunity. And he's like, great, let's go up to the studio. So I followed him up to the studio, which was just up in, around the corner from where we had lunch. We rolled in and they put a bass on me, and the producer was like, yeah, this one's in C sharp. So ready? Are you ready to go? Okay, go. And then they, we just rolled it, and I just made up some stuff, and that was the end of that. and that's me joining Rob Zombie's band. That's how that all works.
Very cool, man. Well, let's check it out right now. This, of course, is Rob Zombie. It is Dragula right here on your Classic Metal Show.
Now that's a parking spot.
Introducing the I may have underestimated the size of my car policy with accident forgiveness from American Family Insurance. Insure carefully. Dream fearlessly. Get a quote. Find an agent. Visit AmFam.com.
Optional policy features not included in base policies. Review policy for coverages and exclusions. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.
Now that's a parking spot.
Introducing the I may have underestimated the size of my car policy with accident forgiveness from American Family Insurance. Insure carefully. Dream fearlessly. Get a quote. Find an agent. Visit AmFam.com.
Optional policy features not included in base policies. Review policy for coverages and exclusions. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.